Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the November 29 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason coming to you today from the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. Our panelists today include Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report, along with the CEO of Bungie Global. His name is Soren Schroeder. We're joined, too, by Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Mike Mock of Mike Mock Commodities, along with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Soren Schroeder, I'd like to start with you as the CEO of Bungie Global. I'm wondering how, if at all, the tariff situation, the trade war between China and the United States has changed global movement of grains, soybeans, corn, other grains, and if that in any way is permanent.
Can you pull it back?
Beans are going to $15.
You made everybody happy. Yeah. Well, that's it. That's all we need to know. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Well, beans are going to $15. Everything in this world is so random. So, I'm I don't have to be an expert, but I can tell you that how this year has evolved has been incredible. If you go back to May, June this year, nobody would have thought that China was able to navigate through a tariff situation as we've had it without eventually tapping back into U.S. supplies. And as it turns out, it's happened. We will sail into January, February of this year and be back in South America, and there'll be another year that goes by before they would have to come back to the U.S. So many articles were written over the summer about the impossibility of that happening, that demand was so great it couldn't adjust. It did. Markets work, and in China there's an invisible hand of sorts that may not be so invisible that has pushed demand in a direction where they're now managing to get through an otherwise impossible situation. So it's been an incredible year with gigantic shift to South America. Of course, we've all felt the opposite side of that in the United States with the resulting mounting carryout in soybeans and why everybody yesterday said that beans could go to below $8. I actually don't think so, but they also won't go to 15. I don't think it's permanent. I do believe there will be a resolution to this, but obviously agriculture is not the big issue, and that's the deal. There's a lot more at stake than that, and so in a way, U.S. ag in particular is kind of caught in the middle of this big other debate of power, most of which is around intellectual property. And how do you put a price on that? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. But I do believe that there will be a resolution, but I don't think it'll be in time to make a big difference in soybeans for the current crop year, and then it's really all about what signals we send to the market for the acreage that'll be planted in April, May. And I don't know what that outcome will be, but I think there'll be a resolution, and I think things will get back to some kind of normal, but it'll take a crop cycle or so, maybe two, to get on the other side of the hangover that's been created by this. That's just a fact. And in the meantime, we all have to make the best of it. So maybe later we can come back to all the other discussions we've had over the last day or so about differentiation and decommoditizing and all that. I got some views on that as well.
Oh, I'd love to. Matt Bennett, he just told us this is a done deal, that China doesn't need the United States this year.
That's new information.
Well, I think basically we've seen that kind of play out. Most people said by October they were going to be back in buying soybeans and crickets. You know, it just didn't happen. We're still waiting on this. With them getting the crop in the ground in Brazil in a timely fashion, yes, they've had a lot of rain, but there's a very good opportunity that they're going to be coming on online. It's quite likely earlier than what they have the last 2 years, whenever they've been pushed back on planting a little bit. So are the Chinese going to need to buy U.S. soybeans? If they do, it's going to probably be through a back channel effort, and I don't think it'll be widely publicized. As I said yesterday, I think there's growing pressure for Trump, especially with this week has been kind of a bad news week for him with the GM layoffs. I know he's been very frustrated with that. There is growing pressure, in my opinion, for him to come out of here with some sort of positive news. Now, I'm not saying they're going to have an agreement, but at least some sort of a ceasefire, if you will, maybe not increasing his tariffs. But in my opinion, as a producer, you don't want to get too wrapped up in all of this. Like Mike was saying yesterday, can you make money at $8 beans if that's where you're at, given, you know, the additional subsidy? Hopefully we're gonna, I mean, I didn't ask for the subsidy. I'm a producer as well. But let's face it, without the subsidy, we were looking at a pretty grim situation in a lot of parts of the Corn Belt this year. If you get the additional subsidy, it's definitely going to help stave off some situations that could be quite unfortunate this year. And by all means, you got to add those into the price of beans and make your decision on what you're going to do. The tougher situation is 2019 beans, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mike, today, over the weekend, Monday, if there's something that comes out from the Trump and Xi meeting in Buenos Aires, there is a bump, there has been a bump this week. Do farmers need to take advantage of it? They've been holding off. They've truly held off on the idea that this is going to be resolved.
That does concern me. It rings a lot of hope, and hope is never a good trading strategy. I think the farmers got off to the start of this year in very good shape, very typical 30, 40, 50% of the crop priced, you know, north of $10, a lot of $10 cash being sold, and then nothing. And since then, as Matt just alluded to, not only did we get this subsidy, but we also got record yields in some areas by wide margins. So I want to continue to focus on, focusing on the revenue and taking it to the bank in this kind of environment. Just since I've been up here, I've been watching, you know, Trump makes comment, some sort of deal likely to come out of the meeting in the G20, and the market rallies a little bit, and then just shortly after that, now Peter Navarro is going to be in the meeting and the market broke back. I don't know how you play in that kind of environment. Something's going to happen Sunday night and Monday, and I think beans actually are kind of positioned where they should be, 50 cents from recent highs and 50 cents from recent lows. Volatility has built, and something big is going to happen one direction or another. Now, the one question I got a lot over the last 2 days, Todd, and I think what the three of us have to do is offer something practical to people. What I've told folks is, on the unpriced beans that you have, the ones that you're struggling with, take a look at some sort of structured product and use some of the subsidy money to pay for it. So we looked at 880 floors in the March with 960 or 980 ceilings. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this, from an execution standpoint, is it prices every day. You know, the fewer decisions that a farmer has to make on a marketing standpoint, the better. So he basically locks in the floor, has upside, and hopes for the best. And in some cases, and you have to be careful with this, but, you know, selling options has gotten a bad name recently, and for all the right reasons. But I had a grower call the other day and said, Mike, the only reason I don't want to do the transaction that you recommended is because it's going to cost me, say, 30 cents. And I said, well, if you took that 10% of the 18 crop that you want to do with that kind of transaction I just mentioned, you know, the structured product, and then put a lid, a ceiling only, at $10 for your first 10% for the next crop season, it's now at no charge. So a lot of what we have to do is get folks to do the right thing, and then it's a psychological battle to get them to execute. But I'm a huge fan of structured products in this environment. I think it's the right tool for this time that we're in.
You're shaking your head yes, Mr. Schroeder. You agree with this?
No, I agree. I think it's all about being prudent, because every day is a random walk in markets, and who knows where we'll be in 2 months. And the other side of the coin is that you've got a South American farmer who is very undersold relative to history, with a record crop coming on. So any bump in the price of beans, any weakness in the real, will be met with significant selling. And that, I think that's one of the big things that have changed over the last 4 or 5 years, is that it's not just about what happens here, it's yes. what happens everywhere else. And we've seen how, I mean, frankly, the foreign exchange effect on marketing patterns in South America are more important than what happens in Chicago or at the CME. And that's, so I think you're right. Invest a bit to protect, and let's see what happens. It'll take a year or two to get through this, and in that period, don't be too smart.
You mentioned Argentina. I think it was late last winter, the most important export facility in South America, maybe you can tell me this is the case, suffered a serious damage where half of the ability for it to export was yes. wiped out when a 65,000 ton freighter ran into it,
yeah.
took it out.
Yeah.
Has it been fixed, and how much of a problem was that for you shipping?
Well,
because it is a Bunge facility.
Yeah,
I mean,
T6 is the largest terminal in South America, and we're a big part of that. And so, unfortunately, that happened, and one of the ship loaders broke and is out of commission until new crop. But as you recall, this was also a year of a very low crop in both beans and corn in Argentina, so the impact was not as big as it would have been otherwise. So we'll be back up and running in March, April, and it didn't change, frankly, anything in terms of global flows.
Kevin, you've been listening to the conversation. What's your advice for producers at the moment?
Yeah, I think you have to be defensive. I think you got to be defensive, and like Mike said, have a floor in place. You know, I think you got to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And like Mike said, that's not, you know, that's tough in this environment. But I think that's what we have to do. We just have to be as defensive as you're able to be in your particular situation. Not everyone's situation is the same. Cash flows are different. Things come up. You just have to have your own personal plan to. In case they get up and walk away from the table. I think, you know, Soren and I were talking last night. I think it's a bigger picture. I think, you know, we talk about personalities of the two leaders and the people that you know in China. And Soren took a trip to the Middle East. He went ahead and went to Davos in the desert and took a trip to the Middle East and the leadership changes there. And I just think there's a lot brewing on nationalism and nationalism. Soren, you know, maybe tell him a little about our conversation there.
Well, okay. I think the point is it's complicated. In geopolitics, the global economy, foreign exchange rates, algorithmic trading, artificial intelligence. I mean, you know, it was always risky to be a farmer. It's a tough but a very honorable occupation. But if you layer the amount of complexity that has been created over the last few years through all this, it is hard to navigate, I imagine. So whether it's, you know, the Middle East, or whether it's China, US, it's all connected. And how you interpret that any given day into a plan is very difficult. That's why you need trusted partners, and you need many sources of input. Not just one, but many. And you need people to help you interpret what all this means. And a lot of it ends up being about sort of prudent risk management, which I think you talked about yesterday, on the one side being as cost competitive as you possibly can, but not everybody can be the lowest cost producer.
Right.
That's impossible. But an eye on cost, prudent risk management of your gross margin, and then slowly but surely try to diversify into alternative crops, whatever it is, other types of businesses that are linked to ag, so that you're not just dependent on one source of income. And for that, you need help, you need trusted partners. I think we are one of those, but there are many others. This is going to, it's a fascinating time, but it's also incredibly complex. And I think those who try to sort of make it too simple are going to get in trouble.
Chip Nellinger, you had a a panel breakout here. What did you tell the producers in those breakouts? And what was your final message to them?
Yeah, a lot of what's been talked about, you have to have a plan and be willing to execute it, pull the trigger, and then adjust it and pivot as things change, because a tweet can move the market 30 cents. So you have to be, we know the market's gonna move, there's a lot of volatility, but if you don't have a plan, you're not gonna be able to execute it. And I go back to a saying, we said it in our breakout, the market's gonna do what it's gonna do, what are you gonna do when it does? And without a plan, you're gonna be left in the dust, scratching your head. And I look forward ahead here. I have a little bit of a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach here about this meeting. Not that it's gonna go bad, but we have so much hope built up and everyone's waiting for this rally when we get good news from this meeting. Yeah. I'm saying to myself, what if you get good news and the market doesn't rally? Because we know that there's a big crop in South America. We know we have a big crop here. And that's gonna be the hardest decision of all that needs to be in the plan, or the what if. What if we don't rally? You still have to take action. That's telling you something important if that happens.
I mean, Matt, what's
character? It's priced already.
It could be. Yeah, it could very
priced.
Well be.
Yeah, it's priced.
What's carry out for corn?
What's that?
Carry out for corn, 1.8?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks think we're going to get down to 1.7 or below. You know, I mean, I think that's one thing that we haven't talked about lately with all the focus on U.S. and China, is that most people assume with some of the late season weather issues that we had that the yield is going to come down even just a little bit more. And if it does, if we can keep demand constant, sure was nice to see the export numbers this morning for corn, pretty solid. But what if you get under a 1.7? If you take a sub 1.7 with the environment we've had the last 3 or 4 years, as far as the bean price has been concerned, that would have equated to a 4.50 or above corn price, a sub 1.7 carryout, in my opinion. But what are you going to do whenever beans are $9? Or below, you know, so it's a completely different set of circumstances. So we can't get super bulled up on the fact that we've got what is labeled a bullish carryout and stocks to use ratio as far as the U.S. is concerned. And as Chip said, I believe last night, I mean, shoot, if you look at that November report, it was wildly bullish on everything except for that freaking Chinese stocks deal. I mean, so frustrating. I mean, everything about that report was a bullish report for corn, except for the fact you've got 307 carryout on world carry. I mean, if you would have had the same situation as 1 month prior with a normal adjustment and we didn't get that surprise, I think you'd have seen 15 cents higher on the corn market the day of that report. I strongly believe that, but that's not what we were dealt. And so it's a frustrating, and that was a very good example of being able to stay on your toes, being able to be, I guess, as Chip said just a little bit ago, very flexible. I mean, yes, a marketing plan's fantastic, but you have to still keep some flexibility in the event that you are wrong.
Does Bungie believe that number is right? You don't have to answer that. I'm sure that's proprietary, so I'm not worried about that one.
No, I think, directionally, you're right. I mean, if there is a story, it's not in soybeans. It's either in corn or wheat, but more likely corn. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, what happens if the Chinese buy 5 million tons of corn?
Yeah.
You know, that's a much bigger bang for the buck than them coming back to the U.S. bean market, because it'll be too late by then anyways. Who knows? So I think you're right.
I think the interesting thing is that they've auctioned off all this corn, 80 million metric ton, I believe, of corn in the last 6 months or so. And prior to that, folks were saying they had 200 million metric ton of corn.
Yep.
Well, now they still have 200 million metric ton of corn.
For
How
sure.
much did they have before? How much do they have now? Getting reliable information is really hard to do. But the bottom line is they're burning through corn like it's going out
Big
of
time.
Style with no signs of letting up.
I think that's right. They're producing a lot less than they're using, and that's the key.
Absolutely.
So whether it's 1 or 2 or 3 years, there'll be a story in corn.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Mike Mock, some of this is related to OPEC and the meeting they'll have as well. The price of oil clearly puts pressure on the price of corn. Does this worry you very much?
Well, sure. I mean, this morning... WTI trades sub 50. I mean, it's just a few days ago, it seems it was 76. The Brent's at 58. And you go back to 2008 when things were exciting and you had 147.50. This goes back to Kevin's point this morning that technology is inherently deflationary. So just as Matt and Soren just indicated, I've got a sneaking suspicion that when this is all settled out, it may very well be more supportive to corn because they not only will open up to some corn purchases, but it's probably LNG, crude oil, ethanol, DDGs, and so forth. I think they'll be helpful.
Yep.
So we're excited about that potential prospect. But having said all that, okay, when we get the opportunities and the way we trade today, you have to execute. You have to have open offers in. We talk about this every year, that if you get an opportunity to hedge corn, 4, 410, 420, do it in some fashion or form. And one real quick thing, Ty, because I run into a lot of resistance, we all do, when we're talking to growers about, I put it in the bin and I sell it in January. I had a fellow in Tennessee tell me one time, I sell it when I need the money or I can smell it. Well, we can't operate that way. So what I typically do is ask folks, you do it this one way, you've always done it that one way. How many seed corn varieties do you plant every spring?
Yep.
And I'll get an answer that tends to be somewhere between 4 and 8. And I said, well, if seed variety 1, 2, 3 really did the job last year, why don't you plant it all to 1, 2, 3? Well, I can't do that, it's too risky. Well, why not take that same thought process and apply it to diversifying your marketing portfolio so you have floors in place? Even Kevin, believe it or not, on October 15th, he buys puts to cover the balance of his unpriced bushels. I mean, I'm interested in what triggered that decision for him to cover himself that fashion, because that's unusual for him to take that step.
Well, I just think, like I said, I think you got to have a defensive mindset here, especially like we were talking with the subsidy in play and the other things. I think you got to be defensive. I like keeping the upside open. The more I hear Soren talk and listen to some other people, maybe we are overly bearish. Maybe the crowd's overly bearish, and it's already baked into the price a little bit. And maybe this thing is going to start to work its way out and push itself back higher. I don't know. I mean, the overall tone, the more people I talk to, it's just a lot of people are bearish, and we've come to learn through the years, Yep. Everybody leaning over the same side of the boat. And generally probably not the way, as Andy would say, trading isn't in a herd-type sport. You don't do too well in a team environment. So I think that's probably right. So, Mike, yeah, I was just covering the downside, trying to keep my upside open and just hope that I just didn't get, crushed on that, some type of crazy.
Whatever you do, don't hedge it in Bitcoin.
Well, thanks, Soren.
Yeah. Congratulations on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so on corn, we'll come across the board. What should they do about old crop corn at this point, and do they need to price new crop corn at all?
Well, that's complicated for a variety of reasons, but is it in the bin? Is it the elevator? Are they going to have to pay more storage? If you need cash, you're going to do a basis contract. I mean, my personal opinion.
Let's go with it's in on-farm storage.
If it's on-farm storage, hopefully. I don't know how everyone else feels, but, being in the elevator business, the only way we ever made money whenever we were in the business is we sold the carry in the market and waited on the basis to get better. And I've told people, don't build bins just to make harvest go quicker. And don't be in a situation where you're waiting to sell it until you can smell it. I like that. I haven't heard that one before. But the bottom line for me is hopefully it's been hedged already. If this market stays stagnant, you better believe that the basis is going to continue to come to the producer to an extent. Now, I do think whenever grain starts to flow more freely, in January, February timeframe, you're going to see some weakening of basis as you would normally expect. But I think over the long haul, if you can be patient, I do think the basis will improve. I want to be patient whenever it comes to corn, especially in the situation where it appears that we're going to be looking at carry getting a little bit smaller. I think that that's where the real story is. And if you can be patient, I think that you should do so. Wait on this market to come to you. And then whenever it's time to act, I think you need to be very proactive. But you have to have a plan in place, be willing to execute it.
Todd, I would tend to agree with that the front end, I'm not an anxious seller, at low 370s March corn. But I would have offers going into the weekend, you know, 385 to 390, mm-hmm. particularly given the fact that the basis is appreciated in a lot of locations. And I think the back end will struggle. I don't think we've got all the wheat acreage in that we intended. I know that there's some controversy on the panel. I'm not going to mention a particularly large observer that doesn't think we're going to get a big increase in corn acres. I tend to lean the other way. So I love selling Dease 19 corn with some sort of structured product if and when it trades $4.405 again. I think the risk, you know, is equally balanced with the opportunity, and I know I can make money at those kinds of levels.
I would tend to agree. I think basis is a big issue here. Matt hit it on the head. Basis has improved pretty nicely and close to historical normal levels. So I think you need to look at basis, locking some of that in. I would tend to agree, have offers in. You can name names. Were you naming the name of me being the acreage?
Chip, you and I get along fine. Matthew, my issue is KVT. Between him and Andy Daniels, they've made it tough on me.
Thanks goodness. I thought you were talking about me.
Because I do think that talking about acreage, that's going to be a real wild card that the market plays out here this winter. And I'm not a big believer that you're going to lose as many bean acres maybe as some people might be.
I am probably not the right person to ask this question to. I think you all said it very, very eloquently. There's a bit of defense here, there's no doubt.
Kevin? I just think you need to simplify. I'll just tell you straight up, I'd buy July puts, go to sleep. I think, and put, you get a stake in the ground and then trade off of it. I think too many times you overcomplicate. It's a complicated situation. You're trading this politics. I mean, you're trading Washington and weather. Good luck. I mean, you can't predict either one. So I think you got to simplify whatever plan or process you have. I always like what Andy and I talk about. You just get a stake in the ground. I'd say buy July puts at the money. And then keep your upside open. You get a rally, like Mike says, maybe sell some calls into it. It breaks. You've got a little profit. Don't oversteer. I mean, most accidents happen. Car goes off on one side, oversteer the other, and you crash the car. I see a lot of traders and producers. You oversteer, and that's when, you dig the hole deeper. So I'd be careful on that.
One last question, and Mr. Schroeder, I think I'd like to come back to the decommoditization of commodities. For those of you listening on the radio, at last week's Farm Assets Conference here at the Van Trump Conference, we've been talking a great deal about whether it's possible to take number two yellow corn and add a characteristic that might be related to sustainability, I would think, to that that would be carried along with blockchain or through agable granular AgriEdge from Syngenta. Land O'Lakes has a facility, and for a premium to be paid. You have some opinions on this.
I do. I think we're all trying to do the same thing in a way, which is to decommoditize and create a more stable margin of some sorts. But it's not a quick fix. This takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes some investment. So sustainability is. It comes in many forms, and in South America it means something different than here, but basically it means good stewardship. And whether it's center field programs like the ones we have, field to market, there are all kinds of different programs out there where you can become part of something for a very, almost for nothing, and get a premium that basically shows the good work you're already doing. Why not go for it? But when it comes to things like different traits. For us, it's more about seeds probably than it is corn, but it doesn't matter, it can be corn too. With gene editing companies like Benson Hill, we've heard about them, it's endless, the opportunities that are in front of us in terms of how we can create just what the consumer wants. But it starts with knowing what the consumer wants and then working your way backwards. It's not just producing what you hope you can sell. That also takes time, and getting into the supply chains of some of the mega companies is a long process. It takes a year or two. So in that period of time, we all have to work together to come up with a plan and a commitment to make this work. For, as far as we're concerned, it's kind of an open book. We are happy to share the economics of all this and find a way to share profit and risk along the way, But it's not just something you do from one crop to the other. It's a multi-year process. Organic farming is a good example of that. It takes a long time, but anything you do along the road of differentiation and added value is a journey. And it takes partnership to make that work. And we're I think quite successful, but it's taking too long. And I think it's because somehow we've positioned ourselves, you know, without intention, as being not aligned, that there's a conflict of interest, and there really isn't. So I would just say, you know, be open. We are. Talk to us, talk to anybody about what we can do, whether it is seeds or whether it is corn or wheat. There is a market for it. There's not a market for all of it at the same time. That can happen. But everybody could be involved somehow or invested in a bit of a niche. But you know, it takes planning, it takes investment. We've been pretty successful at it, and we're working hard to do more. But it's not something you do from one crop cycle to the next.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to our programming anytime you'd like in its entirety on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including the CEO of Bunge, Soren Schroeder, along with Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Micah Mock of Mock Consulting, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. Of course, Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Conference. We come in to you this week, of course, from the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Give these guys a nice round of applause. Thank you.